Good morning, Delaware. It's a great morning here. Not such a great morning in the UK with the passing of Prince Philip. Talk about the end of an era.
99 years old.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. The woman we'll be interviewing next week on the radio, Kate Quinn, has written a book called The Rose Code. Mm-hmm. Prince Philip's a character in this book.
How interesting.
Yes, because before he got betrothed to the Queen, he was known as quite a playboy. Mm-hmm. And he's actually dating one of the characters in this book. Our guest today is Mindy McGinnis. I got a full disclosure. I'm going to be utter fanboy today. Hi, Mindy. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm really, really good.
Well, you're not as good as your book is, and I'll tell you that, because that book, your new book, just blew me away. We'll be talking about that later in the show, but man, that I kept everybody I'm talking to right now, I'm saying, get this book. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. So anyway.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you for being here today. Nicole, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. It's a beautiful day. I was happy for the rain yesterday. It brought the pollen down just a little bit, so my eyes are only mildly itchy today.
Well, you know, you make it even more of your wish the rest of the weekend, according to what that weather forecast sounds like.
I'll take it.
Yeah, so... you won't have to worry about doing any outside work, apparently. Let me put it that way.
There we go.
Yeah,
right,
so.
Right.
Anyway, so what are you reading, listening to, binging on, all that sort of stuff?
Well, this is a little sneak peek to what we're going to talk to Mindy about the second half of the show. But her book, The Initial Insult, I talked about last week, it has a lot of references to Edgar Allan Poe stories within
it.
Yes. I did not have the pleasure of doing any deep studies of Poe in my high school career, in my college career. I took plenty of literacy courses literature courses. I took plenty of like American Lit and, you know, other just all of that. But Poe never really came up. So I wanted to get another look at it. So the first thing that I did was I went down into our teen graphic novel section and I found a book called Poe, Stories and Poems. It's a graphic novel adaptation by Gareth Hines. Mm-hmm. And this is amazing. If you know a little bit about Poe and you want to see a different adaptation of it, or if you know nothing and you want this to be your introduction, this is a great way to get started. It's very accessible. It doesn't feel lofty or anything like that. And the way that it starts out is with the Poe checklist. And so it has, it talks about Poe has some favorite themes that he uses to achieve his sense of horror. And so they give a key to recurring motifs, which you'll find listed at the beginning of each of the stories.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, it's got the Mask of the Red Death, the Cask of Amontillado, Annabelle Lee. And at the beginning of all of those, you'll see that in the Mask of the Red Death, it uses death, disease, and scary sounds to kind of build its horror tension. If you begin, let's see if I can get to the beginning of the Cask of Amontillado. Oh my gosh, it uses confinement, darkness, a lack of a guilty conscience, insanity, murder, a premature burial.
Where would we see those themes again, I wonder?
I don't know. Maybe we'll hear about this in the second half of our program today.
I certainly hope so.
This is a really, really beautifully illustrated graphic novel. It's full color. It's a large size, but it still has the individual panels. You'll really, really enjoy this. So I'm going to bring it right back to the library and check it in as soon as the show is done. But then I wanted to take a deeper dive, and so I looked up the annotated Poe, and this is the opposite of the graphic novel version. This is extremely lofty and academic, and it is edited by Kevin J. Hayes. It's got a foreword by William Giraldi, and it is going to be a lot of Poe's short stories and poems, and it's almost the short story will be on one half of the page, and all of the annotation is on the other half of the page. Sometimes even so, the short story is on the left page and all the annotation is on the right page. I mean, if you want to take a really deep dive into Poe, this is the place to go. So I'm going to hang on to this one for a while so that I can really get deeper into it. But if you're looking, you know, that's one of the things that the library is great at doing, is helping you take a deeper dive into things that interest you.
Absolutely. Mindy, I've never talked to a writer who wasn't also a reader. So what are you reading right now yourself?
Well, you know, actually, after the pandemic and shutdown, I actually really struggled to read. It was a horrible experience. I had a lot of friends that were going through it, too, like lifelong readers, suddenly not being able to find something that would catch their interest, hold their interest. And it, in some ways, like it was really difficult because this is our hobby. This is our time, right?
Right.
National shutdown, readers unite. We got this. you know, in some ways, it's it was really kind of a slow period of reading for me. But when that happens, what I do, if I'm not finding anything that's catching me and holding me, I usually return to the classics. So what I read over the winter was actually The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Wow.
And I don't know if anyone has ever read Hunchback.
Nope.
But I don't know who at Disney was like, hey, this is a good thing to turn into a Notre Dame. It was just, oh my gosh. I mean, just a quick walk through, everyone died. I mean, that's...
I heard...
Actually, everyone died.
I heard Moby Dick described one time as everyone dies but Ish and Fish.
Yeah, that's the good. That's the one. Yeah, one-liner, everyone dies. And literally, so Phoebus, the hero, the love interest, the soldier, he does live. And, you know, Victor Hugo put a great end cap on it. The last line of the novel actually is, as for Phoebus, he did not die. His fate was worse than death. He married.
Oh, wow. Victor Hugo Ooh. With a burn.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. It was, I mean, I knew it wasn't going to be cheery, but I was like, wow, like actually everyone dies except the goat, Esmeralda's goat, and then Phoebus, who has to live a life of matrimony.
It was a lot harder to get out of it back then, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good word of wisdom is if you love a Disney movie, don't look up the original that it's based on because you'll be
never
disappointed. It's kind of like meeting your heroes. Just don't do it.
Yeah, it's probably usually
not a good
idea. So, well, my book, actually, I do something that I don't usually do, and that is I'm listening to an audiobook right now.
Yay.
It is called Our Team. The Epic Story of the Four Men Who and the World Series That Changed Baseball. Mm. And it's by Luke Geplin. This is apparently his first book. He's been writing short stuff for online magazines like The Atlantic and other magazines like that. But he's focused on the 1948 Cleveland Indians. The last time the Cleveland Indians won the World Series, incidentally, that's not, no spoiler alert. Most people who are fans know that. But he focuses on Bill Veeck, who owned the team. Larry Doby, who was the first African-American player in the American League. Satchel Paige, the great pitcher from the Negro Leagues, who then moved over to the Indians in that season. And Bob Feller, who was the longtime star pitcher for the Indians. And so Veeck is kind of an innovator. He was an anti-racist. He was the last baseball owner who was not independently wealthy. He actually had to scrape the money together to buy the team. He also came up with lots of things that we think of as real common now, like having fireworks after a home run or having music in the stands other than just like a brass band.
Oh, cool.
He had people entertaining in the stands between innings.
He made it a spectacle.
He made it a spectacle, right, a real destination. Larry Doby was, like I said, the first African-American player in the American League. He had a really rough first season in 1947, but in 48, he came into his own and became a really superstar outfielder. And then Satchel Paige was the greatest pitcher of all time, basically. But he couldn't break the color line until he was 42 years old.
Wow.
At 42, he came in and lifted up the rest of the pitching staff at the Indians. Had a fantastic season. He made, I believe he was the oldest rookie of the year. Because it was his first season.
At 42?
He was also the first African-American pitcher to pitch in the World Series. So, because by the time they instituted the World Series in 1903, the color line had been put in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bob Feller was basically the best pitcher in the majors in the 30s and the early part of the 40s until World War II intervened. Then he came back after the war. He tied the record for the most strikeouts in the American League in his first game. When he was 17 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. He played from 36 to 41 and then from 45 to 1956, interrupted by 4 years in the U.S. Navy. So what Eplin does is he takes all these players who, you know, they were all great individuals, interesting people, flawed people, but amazing, all Hall of Famers now. And he makes the story about how that team came together and what it meant to the city of Cleveland. So I'm listening to it. Leon Nixon is the narrator. He's terrific. He does a great job of telling the story. There's not a lot of dialogue in this, so he doesn't have to do a lot of different voices, but he modulates his voice well enough that you never get bored listening to him. So there's so many interesting backstories. Feller and Page used to pitch against each other before the color line was broken because they would do barnstorming games where they would pit black teams against white teams. Mm. And Feller was being the best pitcher in the majors, and Page is the best pitcher in the Negro Leagues. They used to just love going at each other because there was good money in it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this is a really good book. I'm about halfway through it right now, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly. If you're a baseball fan, if you're a Cleveland Indians fan, you want to read this book. It just came out March 31st, so it's really new, and it's available on audiobook and in paper. So hope you'll take a look at that. So we will be back in a few minutes with Mindy McGinnis to talk about The Initial Insult and why I love this book. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Off the Shelf. This is George Needham thanking the Friends of the Library for their sponsorship of this show, and Greg Tellis, Gage Tellis.
What's my name?
Why am I changing your name to Greg? Gage Tellis, who's working the board for us today, and welcoming Mindy McGinnis, who is our guest. Mindy, it's great to have you here again. It's your new book. Like I said, I just absolutely love it. Tell us a little bit about The Initial Insult that Nicole and I haven't already spoiled.
I mean, confinement, darkness, death, fear, sickness, all of those things. Those are all good keywords. So The Initial Insult is kind of an update of Poe. I always have enjoyed Poe. I think if you read any of my books, you can see there's an influence. I think probably my first real interaction with Poe was as a freshman in high school, when suddenly we're asked to read The Cask of Amontillado. And I remember reading that short story and just looking up and looking at my teacher. And I know that, I don't know if it was on my face, but I was thinking, you can do that in a story? This is allowed? And like suddenly this whole world like opened up to me because, you know, I had been reading pretty safe stuff, and most of the things that we were assigned in classrooms were fairly didactic. And so I was like, oh, holy cow. Oh, all right. If you're allowed to do that, let's go. I'll be a writer. So I just devoured a lot of Poe, and, you know, I wanted to find a way to update it, obviously, but also play with it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I ended up writing The Initial Insult, which draws very heavily from three Poe short stories in particular, the most obvious one being The Cask of Amontillado, mm-hmm. right. but then also The Black Cat,
yes.
and The Mask of the Red Death.
Yes. Right.
So,
yeah.
Long story short, you end up with two former best friends that are now enemies at a high school party, with everyone gathering together, having a big Halloween party. Everyone is drinking. Suddenly this really volatile virus was sweeping through the area, and it lands at the party. Everybody is getting sick. These two girls in the basement are going to be having this battle of wills, more than likely until one of them is dead, mm-hmm. in order to find out the answer to this deep, dark family secret from 7 years earlier. And at the same time, there is a wild panther wandering around the countryside loose because it has escaped from the local, what in my time we would have called a white trash zoo.
Right.
Which is basically an irresponsible exotic animal owner. So when I came up with this idea, I was like, how in the world am I ever going to pitch this book? And then suddenly the entire world changed. And Netflix did The Tiger King, and now it's really easy. I just say, it's The Tiger King with coronavirus, Edgar Allan Poe in Appalachia.
Yes. Mindy, this is amazing, and that leads me right into my question, which is, how early did you start writing this book, and how in the world did it all align with the coronavirus and the Tiger King.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. I know. So I wrote it in 2018.
Oh, my gosh.
And wow. Yeah, so I had none of these references. I had none of them. And I, when Tiger King came out, of course, everyone was talking about it. And I usually can be something of a snob. If something is really popular, I'm just like, no, that's okay. I don't want that. So I sat down and I watched The Tiger King, and I'm like, oh, this is easy. Now, I've got an elevator pitch for the most complicated book that I've ever written now. And yeah, so for the longest time, I usually have like operating titles in my head for my books as I'm working on them. And this one was Appalachian Allen Poe.
Oh.
And I was like, that's clever, but now it's just Tiger King meets Edgar Allan Poe with a dose of the pandemic.
Yes.
Yes, right. So I was having a lot of fun going through the book and looking for the other references to Poe, the names and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Prospero being the next town over, and mm-hmm. the Ravens being the team mascot.
Mm-hmm.
And, the names Annabelle come up, and Lenore, and it's like, oh my God, this is so good. I remember Poe is about the only, well, Poe, Dickens, and Twain are the only 19th century authors I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So this was just such a treat. But I've heard this is the first of two books about this situation. Am I right?
It is. What else,
don't want to, you know, give anything away, but what else can you do? This seems so complete to me. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So much. You can do so much. So I'm very, very excited for the second book to come out, which, of course, will not happen until February of 2022.
Dang.
It is called The Last Laugh.
Oh.
And yes. So that one is The Last Laugh. And it, for those of you that have read it, your narrators will now be Tress, the character in the first book who is essentially walling up her biggest frenemy in the basement of an abandoned home.
Mm-hmm.
Her cousin, Rivet.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the longtime butt of all of the jokes.
He was having a rough night.
Beginning of his life. He had a rough day at the party.
Yeah,
he sure did.
He ended up on blast, and Rivet has a drinking problem. And when he drinks, he is completely unable to tell a lie.
Mm-hmm.
So at the party in the first book, his friends, so-called, have gotten him drunk and are basically asking him questions that he is answering honestly, very deep, very personal questions, and they're streaming it to the entire world.
It's like the worst game of truth or dare ever.
Yeah.
ever. And his cousin, Tress, who is in the basement slowly murdering her best friend, has the opportunity to stop it. And she's like, you know what? This is the best possible distraction ever. We're just going to let this keep going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an overall mystery of the two books, which is what happened mm-hmm. to Tress's parents, who disappeared 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Are they dead? Were they murdered? If so, who killed them? Where are their bodies? So that's an overarching story that you will get the answers to in book two. Also, Rivet is not happy about what happened to him in book one.
Oh.
No. And so if you have any Poe references, I will just say that the second book relies on the structure and insight from the Edgar Allan Poe tales of Hop Frog, the Telltale Heart.
Aha.
And what is the third one?
It's up to the readers.
I can't remember right now.
The readers got to figure it out.
Yeah, it's Hop Frog, Telltale Heart, and Murders in the Rue Morgue.
Uh-huh.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I see
it.
And
so your animal narrator, which I should say, for those of you that are wondering how in the world a person could possibly read all this darkness, there is a third narrator in the first book,
yes.
And it is, in fact, the black cat. Mm-hmm. It is a panther that is wandering around the countryside loose, and the panther has his own chapters. So in the second book, The Last Laugh, your animal narrator is Roo, the
Aww.
Orangutan.
Oh, I love
yes.
Roo.
I like Roo a lot, yeah. But the panther was quite a poet.
Yes, I was going to say, Mindy,
oh, yeah.
So the cat was written in prose. Is this the first that you've had prose in your books?
Poetry.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Poetry. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. It is the first time that I have ever tackled that. I had a situation where I pitched the book to my editors with these two girls as the narrators, Tress and Felicity, these longtime friends slash enemies who have a lot of beef to pick with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them is right or wrong. For every story from Tress's past where she feels that Felicity has done her an insult, you also get Felicity's point of view. And pretty soon you realize that nobody is wrong and nobody is right, but somebody is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to temper that with the inner thoughts of a wild animal. I'm not sure why I thought that was a good idea, but once I got into it, I really enjoyed it.
It
did put me in a weird position of wondering what is the internal monologue of an exotic animal like. So that was interesting sidebar as an author.
I just have to wonder, from the picture that was on your website there, is Norton the inspiration for the black cat? That cat, I don't know if it's just the angle, but that cat looks huge.
Oh, your kitty.
He is huge. Yeah, Norton is one of my fur babies, and he is huge. I have always had cats. I love cats. I've always been a fan of black cats in particular, just because you're not supposed to be. So therefore, I just go ahead and do it. So I've always had black cats, and I love them. I love kitties. And one of the things about cats that I have always noticed is that sometimes they're interacting with things that aren't there.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes.
As a cat mom, you'll see them watching, chasing, looking. There's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen two cats do that at the same time, looking at the same point of nothing and reacting to it, which just has me going, okay,
what do you
cats
see?
Are functioning mm-hmm. in a different plane. They've got some secrets. So
no, they're just trying to psych you out.
I know. Well, that's also possible that they are devious little murderers. So you can take it either way. And I really included like both of those possibilities in the panther and his narration. And he is one rough character.
Okay, we're almost out of time, so I want to make sure that Nicole gets the plug in for your coming to talk to the library folks here on Zoom. So please go ahead.
Yes, other than your wonderful book and we love having you as a guest. You're also here because on Wednesday, April 21st at 7:30 p.m., we are doing a virtual author visit with you. It is going to be on Zoom. All you have to do is go to DelawareLibrary.org, click on our events tab, go on over to April 21st and register. It's a free registration. You don't need to have a library card. Just punch in your information and you can join us on that Zoom call.
And don't forget, we also have the two authors coming in on April 29th for the Friends of the Library. That one is a ticketed event through Eventbrite. You can find more information at DelawareLibraryFriends.org or at the library website. It's going to be Kate Quinn and
Martha Hall Kelly.
Martha Kelly. Thank you. Yes. So thank you, Mindy, so much for being here. It's Mindy McGinnis. The book is The Initial Insult. Don't miss it. You're going to love this book. You don't really have to know Poe to love the book, but if you know anything about Poe, you are going to just absolutely go crazy for this. So thanks for being here, Mindy. We'll look forward to seeing you in a week and a half on Zoom. So thanks for being here with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Bye-bye now. And so, Nicole, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
And I'll get your name right this time, Mr. Tellus Gage. Sorry about that. Thanks to our friends of the library, and we will see you in the stacks.